This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Oh, Najee, what was that?
Sorry.
Because I'm catching my breath, because I'm going to see if I can do this whole thing in one breath.
Oh, okay. Don't hurt yourself, man.
Welcome to season 11 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is basically a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs or duos. We are talking about ladies who are just a part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find, as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning together.
Today, we're continuing the story of Anne Ting, first licensed woman architect in Pennsylvania and longtime collaborator with Louis Kahn. I'm Nurjiri Rivas, still thinking about all the gold medals and world records from the Olympics in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers, wondering how the swimmers that swam in the sand during the Olympics are doing. Based out of Miami, Florida.
And I'm Lizzie Rahr, missing seeing Snoop Dogg snooping around Paris in San Francisco. I loved it. I loved it all.
I loved it. Equestrian? It was so funny.
Oh, when he went to the horses with Martha? Loved it.
Yes. Beautiful.
Well, you guys, we got a lot of room to cover today, so put on your seatbelts. We're going fast and furious with a recap of last week's episode.
Ready?
Let's do this.
Anne is born in 1920 in China. Her parents are missionaries. She grew up in Asia, but traveled often to the U.S. In 1944, she graduated from Harvard with a degree in architecture, making her among the first group of women that could put that on their resume. A year later, she started working at the firm Storonov and Kahn, collaborated heavily on Kahn's projects. When the firm dissolved a few years later, Anne moved on to Kahn's firm. In 1947, she became the first woman licensed architect in Pennsylvania. And I couldn't find an exact date of when this happened, but I know she also made partner at Kahn's firm. So now we're caught up with last week's episode.
Ooh, okay, great. I needed a little refresher, but now I'm all caught up.
That might have been the quickest recap ever.
Yeah. Like,
but listeners, if you want the details and all the tea, check out last week's episode.
Right. By this time, she was extremely fascinated with the metaphysics of geometry, and she found a way to include this on every project she worked on and to influence Louis's own design thinking. She was totally obsessed with Platonic solids.
What are those?
They are geometric solids whose faces are all identical, like regular polygons meeting at the same three-dimensional angle.
Oh.
Okay, that's a lot of words, but the most well-known one is a tetrahedron, aka pyramid. Actually, I take that back. The most common one is probably a cube.
Gotcha. Okay.
Oh. Doesn't Platonic solids sound so cool? Like they're in love?
Yeah.
Except not. Like that's...
Really? Well,
Platonic.
Agreeable. They're agreeable.
They like each other.
It's friendship. It's not in love.
They're friends.
Okay, fine.
But they're solid.
I mean, that's what platonic means.
See, this is why people are in situationships, because of this.
Because they think platonic means love.
It's a love. I get my meanings mixed up, but you're right. They sound like friendly geometries.
Correct. Yes.
Anne was all about exploring how we could inhabit platonic solids. Wink, wink. Her daughter said she believed that the five platonic solids were the most basic archetypes upon which all organic structures, micro and macrocosmic, were formed.
Whoa. Okay, that feels very meta, or like the meaning of life. But I love that Anne was so into these platonic solids.
Right? Like, it's beyond just shapes. Also, spoiler alert, there's a daughter.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Just dropping that in.
Let's continue. Platonic solids.
Breadcrumbs. Breadcrumbs.
It's a whole loaf of bread. Just whole daughter with a quote. Like, what? That's no breadcrumb.
Yeah. Well, from what I read, it felt like Anne believed every answer, including the meaning of life, could be found in platonic solids. Like, she was really into it. A great example of how Anne's platonic solids found their way to architecture was the Philadelphia City Tower project. Anne first thought of it in her free time, as we all do in her free time. She was basically doing parametric design by hand for fun. Then she made a model with triangles and showed Louis, who of course thought it was bomb diggity. Together, they built a model that ended up being a zigzag, very tall, high rise of acute angles.
I mean, of course he thought it was cool, but also I like that she was doing parametric design by hand or like in her mind. Amazing.
Tell me about it.
I bet you those sketches were cool. I also think it's cool that her and Khan can, like, nerd out together on this. It's kind of cute.
Isn't it?
Oh, no, Jessica.
Yeah.
I had to do it. It was right there. Cute, because it was the acute angles.
That's cute. I laugh, Jessica.
I know. No, Jenny would love that.
All right. The design was never built, unfortunately, but they submitted the model for the Visionary Architecture exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art. It's a pity that the project was never realized. It's a pretty sweet model, all about the geometry and how the pieces come together, innovation in space framing. You see through the structure of the space and how that in itself creates the space. Okay, I can describe it, but you really gotta see it for yourself because it's really, really cool.
Okay. That is a cool model. It reminds me of Kinex. Mm. You remember those toys when we were kids?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, the Ting toy sounded Kinex-y too, if I'm being honest, but this would have been a really cool building if it had gotten built.
Agreed. So the Ting toy was cool, but this model, now that's cool.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you're in New York and you want to swing by the MoMA, you might be able to see renderings of the model. It lives in their collections, but not sure if it's on exhibit right now, so TBD. Surprise yourself. Go there, check it out, see if you can find it.
Enjoy some art.
And I gotta say that at least as of late as 2018, the work was only attributed to Khan because Khan forgot to include Anne's name in the submission. Here's to hoping that that mistake has been corrected.
Cue eye roll.
Oh, no. It's only attributed to Louis. Ugh. That needs to be corrected ASAP.
Maybe it already is. I did not find a definitive.
Let's hope so.
I agree. I didn't find a definitive answer on that. But it just boils my blood a little bit that it was her idea.
Yeah.
But moving on. Another very important project is the Trenton Bathhouse, which people often attribute entirely to, you guess who? Mr. Louis. When in fact, you see pieces of her in the cubes and forms of the space. In typical Starkitect fashion of the first half of the 21st century, Khan never corrected anyone when all the credit was given to him.
Ugh. I hate that for Anne. Ah, another instance of a big name architect, a Starkitect, getting all the credit, and us learning only about him and his contributions.
Boo!
Yeah, this feels like a never-ending theme as of last week.
Yeah.
All them projects that we've all kind of revered Khan.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I have. And come to find out a lot about what is impressive about the projects that I like was thanks to Anne.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a big eye-opener for me. For example, one of the most important architectural features of the Trenton Bathhouse is how light enters the space through the roof. And that was all Anne. Louis was working on a roofless scheme, and Anne came in, she saw that, and she said, "Well, that's a neat idea. I like that. It's interesting because I actually had this other one in mind of four symmetrical arranged squares with hip roof inspired by the bathhouse I grew up seeing in China. Check this out." And she did a little model, showed her idea. And Louis was probably like, "Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying." No, it wasn't, Louis. No, it wasn't.
I'm sure that's exactly how it went down.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say that was a quote, people.
But I'm glad that Anne fought for her idea and that it made it into the project and this roofless design wasn't realized.
Right? Like, what was Khan on? A roofless scheme? Like, what? I don't know. Maybe it was interesting in theory, but no finesse. But Anne, we love you, girl. I really like this, and I hope we get to see pictures.
Yeah. This may be considered hearsay, like everything I've said already. But Carrie Jacobs, a writer for the Architect magazine, also founding partner of Dwell, wrote that William Whittaker, who is the curator and collections manager of the Architectural Archives of the University of Pennsylvania School of Design, told her that the bathhouse was basically Anne's plan.
Oh, scandalous. Okay. But I love that this is being written about and that people are realizing all the work that Anne put in.
Heck yeah. Women helping women spread the word. Love to see it. And shout out to William for acknowledging it.
Anne got to design her own home too.
Oh.
She named it the Ting House. Let's see you take credit for that too, Louis.
Mm.
No. No, you don't. It's 100% hers. All 1,320 square feet of it. She was able to really let her style shine through. It's a single family home with a timber framed ceiling inspired by her platonic solids in the form of a pyramid, slotted windows, and metal-screened open-work staircases. From the outside, it seems unassuming, but it's really not. People have described drawings of the roof as looking like advanced diagrammatic origami.
Ooh, that roof plan sounds really cool. And way to go, Anne, designing your own home.
Living the dream, girlfriend. Living the dream.
previous owners of the house, after Anne passed away, described it as living in music. Isn't that a beautiful description of your design? I love that. Here's how Carrie Jacobs describes the house. And I quote, "A work of sculpture, obsessively crafted, with views and living spaces framed by acute angles. Like the bathhouse, it was all about naked rafters and sunlight."
I mean, that sounds lovely. And I'm so glad that the future residents saw the beauty in her design as well.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a symphony of awesomeness.
The puns are on fire today.
She's rolling with it.
Yep.
Louis and Anne eventually got close, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
Got a little more than platonic.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Oh.
But there was drama.
Oh.
Because he was married.
Oh, no.
In 1953, Anne was awarded a Fulbright scholarship, but turned it down because she found out she was pregnant. And she knew that it would lead to a big scandal. And she still ended up going to Rome, though, so I didn't quite get that. But anyway.
Wait, whoa. Okay, that is a big scandal. But wait, she got the Fulbright but turned it down and then went to Rome anyway? Like, why not take the Fulbright? I mean, I guess it might be hard to do your research with a child and pregnant. But seems like if you're going anyway.
Y'all didn't know that Louis Kahn was a player? He had girlfriends and wives and different area codes. I just forgot that Anne was a part of that mix. Well, listeners and hostesses, we need to watch the film My Architect, okay? It's directed and produced by Kahn's son, and it talks about this a little, about the affairs. But now I need to watch it again to see what it talks, like how they talk about Anne. Because I don't know. How did she end up in Rome?
Yeah, that confused me too. But several sources stated this, that she still went to Rome. I searched for why she did this, but came up short. The answer probably lives out there in a book that I would need to buy. So TBD.
I could see also being like, I don't want this scandal to be a bigger thing, so I'm going to go far, far away. You know?
Yeah.
That would be really, really hard.
True. Or maybe it's in the film. I'm telling you, we gotta watch the film. Because I don't remember much of the movie, because the first time I saw it was like in high school over years ago. But from what I can remember is that all of these women stayed because they thought Kahn would be a dependable man and that Kahn would choose them versus the other women. I could be wrong, but I remember feeling sorry for the ladies and kind of annoyed.
Yeah, I knew that Anne and he were together, but I didn't know it was like so many people, you know?
I mean, maybe not that many, but if you're married, it's like one too many mistresses, you know what I'm saying?
That's a point. Well, Anne and Louis's daughter, Alexandra Ting, who grew up to be an artist, was born in 1954 in Italy and lived the first year of her life there. During that year, with a newborn baby, Anne found time to study with the super famous structural engineer and architect, Pier Luigi Nervi, and write to her baby daddy every single week.
What? I mean, Anne was keeping busy, even without the Fulbright. So I love that she's still making connections even in Rome and as a new mom.
And Pier Luigi Nervi, we did talk about him briefly with Ada Louise Huxtable. So real deal architect or engineer.
Yeah. I think Lena Bobardi
also
studied under him or
worked
with him. She was connected to him somehow as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she's rolling in all these circles. She's a new mom. She's doing it all. Well, Anne and Louis ended things in 1964, and she officially left the firm. I'm not going to lie. I've been waiting all episode for this to happen. I've been wanting her to leave that firm and start her own thing for a long time.
Yeah.
In my research, I kept getting so angry at Kahn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, I was not there. I don't know their life. But I just kept thinking, girl, enough of this guy.
Yep.
That's not even giving you any credit. Keeping you on the sidelines, both professionally and personally. I kept wondering if she could go on her own and finally be able to shine bright like a diamond that she was.
Agreed. Okay, so everyone has to watch this film. Okay, so if you watch the film or if you know Khan's story, he does not have a happy ending, which is sad. But I kind of thought it was a result of his actions, like karma finally got to him.
Oh.
And he deserved what he got.
Hot takes.
Hot takes. But I mean, the way that he treated these women and like Anne. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm happy / hoping that Anne is off to do amazing things.
After she left Khan, she pretty much had a solo career that should have been pretty amazing had she not been a woman. But she was a woman in the 60s in this profession. So she didn't get the star power and attention she truly deserved.
Oh, no.
Ugh. Okay, I'm really sad for her that she didn't get to go on and do all the amazing things she should have been able to do because she was a woman.
She lived in Italy about a year, and that whole time she was still a partner at Khan's firm. And when she got back to the U.S., she went back to the firm, and they worked together for about a decade.
Oh.
They, at some point, had a falling out, and Khan figured out a way to give her less and less projects to work on until she got fed up and left.
What a butthole.
Ugh. Yeah, wow, that's worse than I imagined, actually. Terrible.
She still kept it moving. Old pal Bucky Fuller recommended her for a grant from the Graham Foundation for Advanced Studies in the Fine Arts. In his recommendation letter, he called her Khan's geometrical strategist. That's a quote. She made history again in 1965 when she became the first woman to get this grant.
Yay, Anne!
OMG. Way to go, Bucky, and good for Anne.
Throughout the rest of her life, she did a little bit of this, a little bit of that. She kept exploring her theories on architecture and geometry, designing homes, writing, teaching. She taught at UPenn from 1968 to 1995, and she also got her PhD from there in 1975.
Diving headfirst into academia. Love it.
Okay, Dr. Tang.
Yeah, Dr. Tang in the house. Anne published a very important essay in 1989 called From Muse to Heroine: Toward a Visible Creative Identity. She talked about how women were developing in the profession of architecture. Here's a quote. The steps from muse to heroine are accomplished by very few. Most women trained as architects marry architects. No longer the woman behind the man, the woman architect in partnership with her husband may nevertheless be barely visible beside or slightly behind the hero.
Wow, that is not totally inaccurate, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. We have definitely seen women who were exceptions to that rule. But I do think that history shows us that there were many women whose star was overshadowed by their husband or professional partner. But it was also a way for them to get into the profession. So it's like a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I need to read this essay. Sounds like an interesting read.
Yeah, we do. And you know that she's speaking from experience.
Mm-hmm.
Anne was always known as Khan's muse. That was pretty much it. That started to change in 2003 when Louis' son, as Jessica has mentioned, Nathaniel Khan, made an award-winning documentary about his father. In the documentary, Nathaniel featured Anne discussing her insights and contributions to the work that she did with Louis.
Tell you. This is a documentary that I've been referencing this whole time.
I know, I know.
I'm really glad that his son was willing to show Anne's contributions.
Yeah.
And that he made that a focus.
Me too. Nathaniel filmed Anne going back to her project, Trenton Bath House, and finding it totally neglected. Thanks to the attention that this garnered, the building was renovated in 2009.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
I want to note that if you go to the website of that project, it's like a shrine to Khan. And I clicked a few different pages in there, and I didn't see Anne mentioned anywhere. I didn't go into every single page because I didn't have time for that. But just saying, I hope that her contributions and her name is in there somewhere.
Like, she's the one who helped get it restored in the first place. And then they don't even mention her? That's not cool.
Oh.
I do not approve.
No. Mm-mm. First, we're adding this to our ARC venture list, assuming that we can visit. I'm telling you, if I don't see a plaque, a bust, or even a signature of Anting in the corner of something, we gonna talk to somebody. A letter will be written. A petition will be created. They have the opportunity to correct this. Like, why? Why?
I like this plan. In 2011, Anne published the book Inhabiting Geometry, where she documented her ideas about geometry and platonic solids as explored through her past work and the Institute of Contemporary Art, ICA, in Philadelphia, hosted a retrospective of her work. After being overlooked for so long, I'm glad that she was alive to see her work being celebrated.
Me too.
Agreed.
On December 27, 2012, she passed away in California, where she was living. She was 91 years old.
Wow. She lived a long life. And I'm so glad to hear that her work was starting to be recognized while she was still alive so that she got to see that.
Yeah, at least there's that.
Okay, I gotta say, here comes a rant.
Oh.
Maybe we need a sound effect, a rant alert.
Okay, so at the very least, listeners, lower the volume because I can see where this is headed and we about to get real loud. Not in the Jennifer Lopez way, but in the annoyed, mad way.
Now that I've learned so much about Anne, I have to say that I take offense to the fact that she was known as Louis Kahn's muse. Because to call her a muse, in my opinion, is to diminish her contribution to the profession of architecture and the work that she did. She wasn't just inspiring Louis. She was designing, drawing CDs, building models. She was doing the work, groundbreaking work, giving ideas that were solely attributed to Kahn. And I am not saying that Louis wasn't a creative genius. I am, and still probably forever, will be a fan of his work. But genius isn't finite. To give Anne her due credit for the work they did together does not take credit away from him. He is no less talented and amazing as an architect because he collaborated with a talented and amazing colleague with another great architect. It doesn't take anything away from him to put her name on the work that they did together. But boy, does it take away so much from her when she's overlooked and erased. And we're not only doing a disservice to her, but to ourselves as well. When we don't allow ourselves to learn from her, to be inspired by her. I really hope that this trend of the solo genius is slowly but surely coming to an end in our profession because we could be so much more together. And rant.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right, especially the term muse versus collaborator. Muse to me implies that they're the inspiration but not participating in the actual work, which obviously was not the case for Anne. So I think that term is, like you said, in a way insulting to her and the work that she did throughout the years. It's misleading for sure.
Agreed. It's like you said, Lizzie. It's one thing if like Anne was like, hey, Kahn, triangles are cool. And then Kahn ran with it and created his designs. But we know that's not the case.
Right.
I had admired Kahn's work, and knowing a little bit about his personal life, like the affairs, the kids, his death, I really tried to separate the man versus the work. And I still plan to do so, but now to focus on Anne, it's really hard to do that. I'm so glad, Najiti, that we gave her two episodes because her story needed to be told. And in this way, the anger that I feel... Obviously, I'm annoyed and irritated at Kahn for so many reasons. I'm mad at the industry and for the schools. We mentioned it before, but this goes on the same page as when we get shoved down our throats about Corbusier and Mies. And I'm so mad that we didn't get the full story about these projects, that we've had to overanalyze to the smallest of details from these iconic projects that come to find out the man didn't do, it was a woman. Even the last week's episode, when we talk about the art gallery and the, yeah, like all of her, all of the work that we associate with Khan, it was Anne.
She had a huge part in it.
Collaborative or not, Anne's name should have been in there.
Yeah.
That's the part that we have to remember. This isn't just an isolated case. This is in the case of like a lot of our ladies, right? Especially in this season of duos. We encountered that when we revisited it last time. And it's not just like the design genius that Anne brought, but also the women that followed through with the construction of the project when the dudes like died or were gallivanting or doing, you know, who knows what. The women were carrying their babies and following through on the project. Some wouldn't even have had the projects that they had commissioned to begin with if it wasn't for our ladies. We're looking at you, Corbusier, because you know who actually gave you that job. But anyway, I don't know if I want to go to the Trent bathhouse now, because I'm telling you, if I don't see a plaque, something, I don't know. Somebody please tell me that they give Anne credit at the bathhouse before we go, because
I hope so.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of strong feelings at the end of this episode, but so glad that we got to share Anne's story, and hopefully we did her tiny bit of justice.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope she realizes that we're just as angered with how it went down. But maybe that's how she had to leave too. I don't know.
All right. Now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drum roll, please. Ingrid Schaffner.
Whee!
Ingrid Schaffner is a curator, writer, educator, and art critic. She was born in Pittsburgh and grew up in Los Gatos, California.
Los Gatos! Shout out to Los Gatos, where my mom and my granddad were born and raised.
Her higher education resume includes Mount Holyoke College, the Whitney Museum of American Arts Independent Study Program, Helena Rubinstein Curatorial Fellow, and a master's degree in art history from New York University's Institute of Fine Arts.
Wow. Excellent CV.
Agreed. Very impressive.
She's seriously a powerhouse, and she shines bright when she is putting the spotlight on overlooked artists and architects. For 15 years, from 2000 to 2015, she was in charge of the exhibition program at the Institute of Contemporary Art, ICA.
This makes me feel so much better than from the rant from before. I love this.
Oh, that's amazing, though. So she was there when Anne's work was on display.
Exactly. And she was also the editor of Anne's book, Inhabiting Geometry. She continues to highlight Anne whenever she can. In March 2020, she was part of a panel event at a conference in Princeton University called Anne Ting, Ordered Randomness. Fun fact, past caryatid Anda French was a panelist at this conference as well.
Oh,
shut up.
That's right.
Whoa. But I love that Ingrid is continuing to do the good work of promoting Anne and other artists and architects who aren't getting their due.
This is what I'm talking about. A true caryatid indeed.
That's right.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word.
tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
A year later, that was it.
Breathe, girl, breathe. Najdi, this is your cold open, cold close. Just saying.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to. We have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.